You are very welcome to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. I hope you're well. I hope you're doing good. I hope you're having a great week or weekend. Delete as appropriate, depending on where you are. I, on this occasion, have a slight bit of a frog in my throat. I know, I can hear you say, it's an awful place for a frog to hide inside an Irishman's throat. But somehow or another, he or she, gender equality and all those things, has managed to get in there and I don't know what to do. But I want to briefly intro this. It's a conversation I've had regularly and irregularly with Helen Bohm. Helen, for those of you who would not be aware, is the floral marquee manager or manageress, God, we're getting back there again, for the Royal Horticultural Society. I would meet her irregularly and we have conversations about, on one hand, maybe where the sideshow has fallen ever so slightly, and on the other hand, it's a case of, I think there are certain aspects of the horticultural industry that are very good at getting themselves out there and placing themselves in front of people like me. I'm sorry that frog has just kicked in again. But on this occasion, I am delighted to say that I have a lady by the name of Roseby. I hope I pronounced that correctly. That's Roseby Morton. And Roseby, you are very welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much, Peter. And it's good to be on with you.
Thanks for coming on. For those of you listening at home, don't get me wrong, this is an irregular. I don't know what it is about the ladies in my life. The ladies in my horticultural life and telephone lines. I think they just don't like talking to me, or they like to have some kind of a masquerade across the voice. But I've been ringing. We've had about 3 or 4 variations of this, and we're eventually getting to the point where it is a clear line. Let's crack on, Roseby. For those who are not aware of you, what is it that you do for a living, let's call it?
First and foremost, a mad keen scented rose fanatic, and I've made it my kind of life career to grow scented roses as cut flowers. And we have a business called The Real Flower Company, which uses these flowers and sends them out for bouquets all around the country.
And here's where my horticultural brain would kick in, because growing up when I was working in garden centres at 16, 17, 18 years of age, going through horticultural college, the one thing that I do still explain to this day, you correct me if I'm wrong, is that I can have a newer, inverted commas, variety of rose that is a little bit more disease and pest free, let's call it that, just for our listeners who are not rose experts. Equally, I can have one that has an amazing scent, can have one that has a beautiful colour of a flower. But in my experience, just as a general, I say a very general rule of thumb, where one has one quality, it usually lacks on the other. Is that a fair generalised appraisal of rose and rose growing?
I think I quite understand where you're coming from, because I think a lot of the garden centres have sold roses which have exactly what you say. So they try and go for disease resistance and ease of flowering, etc., in the garden, to the detriment of scent. And I personally think there's absolutely no point having a rose in your garden unless it has scent. So it's a case of what variety you choose. That's what it comes down to.
Well, let me pick a different analogy or example. Horticultural, I should still add. But there are varieties of apples that I would grow. And I understand that if I do X or I spray them with X, then I can have a disease-free apple, for example. But I don't mind that it's slightly blemished. In your case, however, you need to sell them on. The purchaser, in this case for me, buying flowers for my sister or the beau of my life in May or in September or in October or April, I would gather need to have... There's a blipping in the background, Roseby. What's that?
It's another line coming in, because my husband works off the same telephone, so I'm just trying to turn it down.
That's okay. I don't mind the beeping.
Yep. Okay. You got the bleep, I'm afraid.
Okay. Well,
hopefully they'll disappear in a minute.
I have no idea what's happening at this moment in time, but the Sideshow listeners know that we work on a huge budget here, so there'll be no edits in here. We'll just leave it as is. Are you back with me? Hello? 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 No. We're gone. Are we gone? Are we back?
Are we back? How's that? Yeah, hello?
Are you back?
No, we're gone. We're gone.
I reckon I'm blaming Ireland. It's nothing to do with us. Hang on.
Take your time.
Hang on a second.
Take your time.
See if I can get any better signal in the kitchen. Is that it?
Oh, we're slightly rough.
Everyone says I love you, but just what they say it for, I never knew. It's just inviting trouble for the poor sucker who says I love you. Take a pair of rabbits who get stuck on each other and begin to woo. And pretty soon you'll find a million more rabbits who say I love you. When a lion gets feeling frisky and begins to roar, there's another lion who knows just what he's roaring for. Everything that ever grew, the goose and the gander and the gosling too, the duck upon the water when he feels that way too, says...
Hello?
We'll try it again. Rosby, how are you?
I could hear you, but I couldn't, you couldn't hear me.
Oh, no, I couldn't indeed. We have it back anyway. Where were we gone to? We were, How to Confuse an Irishman is a really simple game, and all of the ladies, I don't think it's an Irishman, I think it's just a male thing in general. The point I was making, Rosby, if I remember it correctly, was that if I'm growing apples in my back garden, I don't mind if I'm making an apple pie or jam or marmalade, which I don't do anyway, but this is a fictitious conversation, so just run with me. I'll bite the apple trees are real. In your case, you need to sell those flowers on to that man who needs to apologise, or to that lady who wants a bouquet in the middle of August. So you can't have the blemish, I'll bite, you want the scent. How does that part work for you from a business perspective?
It's very challenging, first and foremost. And when we first started, we've been going about 20 years now, which is quite scary. But when I first started, we were growing outside in my husband's best wheat field. And the rain, as you can imagine, it's not Ireland, but it still rains quite a bit, was ruining the blooms. You know, even though we picked them quite tight. So we now grow them under polytunnels, which helps a bit. But it's very much a case of what variety you choose to grow. And some varieties are much cleaner and better and, you know, less prone to disease than others, just like apples. That's really how it works. But we try and spray where it's as sustainable and environmentally friendly as we can be. But we do have to spray because... You know, you're going to get problems with things like mildew. And obviously, as you so rightly say, you know, that man who hopefully isn't apologising, he's just saying, I love you, or whatever it is, you know, wants a bouquet which looks good. So we try and get them as good as we can.
Let's bring it a slight bit of a different way. And you mentioned it there, mildew. There are points in time when I talk to the likes of, not Rose B, but Rosie Hardy and Rob Hardy, and we talk about nursery growing, and there is a bleeping going in the background, and we'll just leave that there. And don't you at home worry about that. But in all good nursery stock production, be it Hortus Loci, be it your own, whether you're growing flowers, good husbandry basics tend to fall into play. Do you do that? And then it's a case of, yeah, Peter, but we still have to spray a little bit just for prevention rather than cure.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key, like everything, it's like building a house. You've got to have good foundations. And I think when you're growing roses, you get them off to the best start you can. You know, you make sure you're putting them as good a soil as you can, and you use lots of muck and, you know, bone meal or whatever else you choose to use. And then it's a case of, yeah, prevention is much better than cure. So you try and give them what they want. And people don't really realise, but roses are very hungry. And I think people make the mistake of not feeding them nearly enough. And they really do thrive on lots of feed and water. and then they are tend to be much healthier.
Yeah, well, I'm reminded of my grandmother when I was 6-7 years of age out putting banana skins around the base of them. My horticultural logic at this stage of the game will tell me it literally looked like I had tipped what we now know as a kitchen green waste bin on top of her front garden, and I'm unsure if it did absolutely anything considering the soil was totally pants. Rose, one of the things that intrigued me was when I, because I'm fantastic for doing research, but you do what is known as a seasonal bouquet, and whenever I've ordered flowers, for those of you listening at home, I'm sorry, but what I'm trying not to do is do the thing that is standard done with a radio DJ and a person who does X. And in normal garden terms, it's usually something along the lines of hanging baskets in summertime. It's the stuff I get asked to do, but it's the stuff I don't want to do. But when I'm ordering flowers for anybody, the one thing I will do is I will ring up the florist and say, what have you got that's in stock? What's in season? What have you got that's looking good? And in your case, I know for a fact, because I've done it with you beforehand, that I can ring and order a bouquet in the middle of September, December, January, March, April, not just February the 14th. And you will have what is seasonal in stock. How does that part work for you?
I'm, as a horticulturist, I'm so strong on seasonality, because one of the beauties of living in the British Isles is the seasonality, and you know the changing seasons are what we try and put in our bouquets. So we extend our season as much as we can, and we're growing bulbs in the springtime. And now it's Lily of the Valley and Solomon Seal, etc. And then it changes and gets into the peony and the rose season and so on and so forth. But a lot of it's foliages. I think people don't take enough interest in foliages. And, you know, foliages through the seasons change and just have such wonderful times of the year when they really look spectacular on whatever it is. That's what we're using. And that's, I think, what sets us apart. Seasonality is key.
It's a funny one though, Roseby, because whenever I talk to anybody, I say anybody who's not involved in the horticulture trade, they will usually tell me, oh, you must be terribly quiet at this time of year. If it's in December, oh my God, it's summertime, you must be out the door. And in reality, the explanation is, no, I just have longer daylight hours and therefore I can work more time in another's garden. Or I say, generally speaking, the weather is a little bit drier. Not if you've been building gardens in Cardiff or at Hampton Court Palace Flower Show last year. In your case, we tend to not maybe, I say maybe, not always, but consider where and what is in season. If there are roses in flower, I say roses, we're sticking with that, or lilies or whatever it might be, or peonies in December. There are very few people who I would know would query why that is or maybe where they're coming from.
I think people are becoming more aware, actually, and I think it's becoming much more important, because I think we're finding now that people really like to gain knowledge on where their flowers are from and how they're grown. And I think, you know, the food industry was there probably 10-15 years ago, you know, with the slow food movement, and people becoming much more aware of what they were eating and, you know, how it's been grown, etc. And I'm very much seeing that in the flower world. And I think people really do respect and love, you know, the fact that our bouquets change, and, you know, we embrace whatever's looking good in that month. I think that's really important.
How many Royal Horticultural Society shows have you been involved in, Roseby, and for how many years?
I started with the Chelsea Flower Show, and that was probably 15 years ago. And we started when we were selling, well, we were doing our bouquets, but we were also selling something called the Perfect Arranger, which is definitely not me. It's a sort of stainless steel contraption that you put flowers in rather than using the florist foam, and that's how we started 15 years ago, and we've been exhibiting at Chelsea every year ever since, except I think we've missed 2 years. So that's what we've been doing. And then Hampton Court, we've been there for probably on and off for about 10 years, and then we've done Tatton Park as well, which I love. I think it's a great show.
I absolutely love Tatton Park. And Isabel Coulter, I should add, hello Isabel, if you're listening, also a former guest of the show. You exhibited at Chelsea in 2019. What did you have? Do I call it a garden, Roseby? Do I call it a display? What is the official technical term on that the RHS grant you?
I'm very good at sort of having an identity crisis. And I think that was probably a bit of an identity crisis, in that the theme was from farm to vase, because that's what we do. So we tried to show what we grow around the base of our stand. So, you know, a mixture of lots of herbs and different foliages and obviously very scented roses and some peonies. And then leading up some steps onto a stage which demonstrated our actual floral arrangement. So we had this amazing arrangement hanging over a table just to explain to people that we're growers and florists. And I hope that message came across.
I'll be very honest with you. The conversation that I invariably have with Helen is that not at all times is the horticulture industry great at promoting itself. Two, it's by pure coincidence that you are the first person who is a grower of flowers and, I should add, an arranger, to put a title on it, of flowers as well. The marquee at Chelsea and the marquee at Cardiff, Tottenhampton are places that very much appeal to my heart. To put all of this in context for you listening at home, it was a conversation with Rob Hardy, and he introduced me to Hampshire carnivorous plants, and he introduced me to Cookie Boy to his friends of Cook's Garden Centre. And Rob's comment to me, very endearing and from the heart, was, don't forget about us, as in those who exhibit within the marquee, and it sometimes doesn't get what it maybe deserves, or maybe in my heart, as a kid who used to grow plants under his bed, the marquee of the flower shows maybe deserves to be a little bit more, but then I can't really argue with it, because I'll go back and say it, as an industry, sometimes we aren't great at promoting ourselves.
I think that's so true, and there's so many brilliant horticulturists out there producing the most fantastic exhibits, and Hardy's is one which, yeah, I just think does the most incredible job, and Hampshire Carnivorous and all these others, you know, and they're very much the unsung heroes. And it's really sad, because I think one of the things they're just not so good at doing is promoting themselves. And it's almost as though they need an ambassador to be out there, you know, singing about how good they are, because they really, really are. I mean, what they do and what they produce is fantastic. And more people need to be aware of that.
And now you know the full reason why the Sideshow started 9+ something years ago at this stage of the game, and 400 and something episodes in. Roseby, were you always into horticulture?
I came from an army background, and we moved around all over the world because my father was in... I was born in Germany, and we went to... I was in Berlin, and we were in Kenya, and we went to... Singapore, etc., Malaysia, all over the place. And my mother always used to take a scented rose of some sort with her, more or less wherever she went, or she certainly would grow them. And even though we were only ever in a garden for a year or two, she would still make it a garden. And so I think from the age of three, I remember, you know, scented flowers. And even though we were never anywhere for very long, that's my memory. And my grandmother's house, which was the sort of the rock, so to speak, because she didn't move anywhere, she had a lovely rose garden. And, you know, as a small child, I remember running through the rose garden and making a filthy mess, picking off the rose heads and smashing them up into, you know, a hideous sort of concoction that I would then give my mother, who was far too polite to say anything other than how lovely. And that's where it all started from.
Did you, as a young... I say as a young girl, you're a young lady now, I'll just clarify that.
But yeah.
As a young girl growing up, did you do the thing with the rose petals in the jar and put it underneath the flowers to make your own perfume?
Oh, very much so. And, you know, the funny thing is that every time we stand at a show now, or, you know, we're talking to people, doing farmers markets, etc., they all say exactly the same. And they all say, gosh, that reminds me of, you know, smashing them up in a jam jar or whatever and making some weird concoction, which was pretty rancid and nasty, but that's what you remember. And I think scent is key to that.
I know when I speak to Dad, the guy who was in the wine trade all his life, I'd be aware because I was around him, but that bottle of wine that maybe cost €10 or €15 or €20, if you said to me that was as good as the one for €3, he would know it by taste, irrespective of the price tag on it. In your case, should you be bringing in a new variety, that is, do you have to do a sort of a sommelier-style thing in it, or do you rate it on, well, how many blooms can I get per annum from it and the longevity of that plant?
Scent to me is absolute key. That's first and foremost. And if a rose doesn't have any scent, then I'm not interested. I don't care whether it's going to produce, you know, hundreds of blooms a year. To me, it's got no character unless it's got scent. So that's the first and foremost. So yes, a sommelier, that's exactly right. And I'm quite fussy about how it smells. Some of them I think smell rather than have scent. And that's very important. I think scent is a very uplifting, you know, emotion that one goes through when one smells a really fresh, beautiful rose or any other flower. And so if it doesn't have it, I think you feel robbed. You know, the first thing people do is put their nose in a bunch of flowers, I think. And if they don't have any scent, then they feel rather, you know, robbed, is probably the opposite word. So, yes, it's very, very important. And then it's important, obviously, to go on to longevity and what they look like and how many blooms you get.
Have I got this right? Is it floriography? The old way of sending, I won't call it subliminal messaging, that's the wrong word to do, but almost hidden messaging by arrangement of a bouquet of flowers.
Yeah, totally. That's absolutely right. I mean, you know, the meaning of flowers, and it's such a sort of widely, you know, fascinating topic. It really is. And, you know, we're trying to do something along those lines now with our birthday bouquets. But people do, that, you know, the message, it's like getting married and having myrtle in your, you know, in your bouquet, or rosemary for remembrance. You know, there's huge meaning in so many flowers. Very important.
One of the gardens that I did some time ago now was a 17th century estate. And in the research on that, one of the conversations I had, gardens on the Big Island, as I refer to it, where the sounds of drunkenness and debauchery could be heard by the public on the outside of the grounds, but that the lower earning classes didn't have access to the gardens, talking about hidden gardens and sunken gardens, and again, the sounds of drunkenness and debauchery going on. And he said to me, but Peter, he said, in floriography, when you were even contemplating that, this was a sort of a hidden way of saying, well, I might consider you as a suited partner. I'm being very eloquent in how I say this. Got it wrong. You said you could blame it on the florist. It was like, would you mind asking your friend to dance? And then she says no, and you turn around and say, well, I never asked in the first place. Am I far off the mark on that?
No, I don't think you did. I don't think it carries quite that same emphasis now, but I think it's becoming more important. And I think, you know, as people sort of, it's almost less is more now. It's the meaning of what you're sending and the colour of what you're sending, etc. You know, it goes back to the dreaded Valentine's festival, and, you know, men thinking they need to send red roses because of what the message of red means, you know, as in romance. But equally, you know, Lily of the Valley is an uplifting flower, and that's what it means, and returning to happiness. And so you can really send a message in a bouquet.
If the stereotypical man in this case, who's not here to defend himself, who's also fictitious, wants to send a bouquet, and invariably it is some sort of floral spray with a dozen red roses in, or maybe there's a white one thrown in because he's really adventurous, what is the alternative?
That's such a good question, because men do have this, you know, hang up that women like red roses. And if you talk to the average lady, she will say, actually, do you know, I really don't. I'd much rather have a pastel mix of flowers or something completely different. But I've been in many a shop around Valentine's and tried to convince men that red roses, they're paying well over the odds for the average red rose, because that's what a lot of the, you know, that's what happens at that time of the year. Whereas if you sort of give your loved one a beautiful bouquet of pastels, she'll be absolutely over the moon with that. And it'll mean a lot more.
Let me just put it into context who you are listening to at home for the minute. 2009, Horticulture Week, good friend of the Sideshow and Peter Donegan, Cut and Flower Grower of the Year. 2012, RHS Certificate of Merit, that was at Chelsea. 2017, RHS Gold Award, Chelsea Flower Show. You pretty much are top of your game.
Well, I'd say thank you very much. I try not to be too British, which is, no, can't possibly accept that, but that's very kind of you to say that. However, I think I'm just always striving. I set out when I started this company to give people a really uplifting, beautiful experience with our flowers, and that's what we try and do. And, you know, we want somebody to open up a box of Real Flower Company flowers and just go, wow, and for them to feel much happier, put a large smile on their face, and then I think we're doing our job properly. It's nice to be recognised, but there's nothing better than seeing people looking really, really happy when they've seen our flowers.
Well, I'm trying to find the garden design landscaping equivalent of what is floral arranging. And I should add, I did study that subject in Horticultural College because, well, I got a bit bored, but I also wanted to see what was behind that curtain over there. The funny thing is I find it very hard to give anybody who I have a, to borrow an Irish word, I have a grauffer or I have a, they have a swagger about them. That's a decent word that doesn't get me into too much trouble. But I find it very hard to give them a bouquet of flowers that I haven't chosen myself. And I think the last time I did, it might have been what I can only describe as a field of Rudbeckias.
So are you not a rose fan, do you mean? Or it's too over the top for you?
It's a bit like me giving you a Boyzone album for Christmas. And that's no disrespect to Boyzone or the Osmonds or whoever was the predecessor to that. But I think I'd rather if you turned around and said, well, I'll give you a Mamas and the Pop, you can have a Jefferson Airplane. I find it very hard to do the normal thing that everybody does. Do you tend to try and do that, Rose?
Yeah, very definitely. I mean, I think not everyone wants roses. And I think there's it's a case of putting some character and meaning into the bouquets. And a bouquet, actually, I always think is a very grand word. I mean, a lot of what we do is little poses, which have got just as much thought and beauty as a great big huge bouquet. And I'm a real fan of less is more. I think there's nothing I like better than a few stems of Lily of the Valley or a few stems of a fritillary or something like that, because plants are so beautiful, and just a few stems of something very simple is a really thought-provoking gift to be given. And I don't think people make enough, take enough interest in that, probably. It's not all about big. It's about, the thought that's gone into it. And, literally going out into a wildflower meadow, which I'm lucky enough to have at the bottom of our garden, and picking a few stems of campion, which is just coming out, that's absolutely lovely to my mind.
We have got to a point where it is becoming fashionable by our county councils to leave the grass verges grow a little bit more, to rather than use bedding plants, they're using bulbs, something you also touched on. But that whole idea of biodiversity, to put a buzzword on it, it very much has become accepted now, where maybe 20, 30 years ago when I was going through college, that would have been entirely frowned upon. You couldn't have done that. We weren't educated horticulturally in that way. Has floristry evolved with those changes as well?
Completely. That's so true. I think, gone are the days when everything had to look immaculate, and you had to have everything had to be tidy, etc. Now it's become much more loose, much more natural, and not so symmetrical. I've been doing this business, as I said earlier, for quite some time now, and I wanted people to get what looked as though it had just been picked from the garden. And I think floristry is definitely going down that line now. But, I do that in my gardening. I mean, there's nothing I like better than gardening, and it's not tidy. I like the flowers and the plants to do the talking and for them to be able to exhibit, their own character. And if they're sort of pruned to an inch of their life, and the lawn's sort of cut to an inch of its life, I think it completely misses what nature's all about.
Roseby Morton is the owner, head don, proprietor, master grower and arranger of realflowers.co.uk, the Real Flower Company. It is an absolute pleasure to have had you on the show. Your debut, a florist's debut. Huge congratulations on Chelsea 2019, a massive success. And fingers crossed you'll come back on and have a chat with us again.
Thank you very much. It's been lovely talking to you.
You too. For those of you listening at home, if you're stuck, if you're on the road, I had musical lyrics coming through my head, and then I realised I still had this frog in my throat, which just doesn't seem to have left me. And I hope it's been an okay, shall I say, listening experience for you. But if you're stuck for anything, including Roseby's details, just send me a note at Sodshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesodshow and sodshow.com. Thank you so much again, Roseby, and I look forward to seeing you very soon.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Roseby, was that okay?
Yep, great. I just wanted to laugh much more, and I was trying to not to. So it was, it was great, really good.
That's good.
That'd be great. Really good.
Okay, Roseby.
Thanks very much. Look forward to meeting you.
You too. Chat soon. Take care. Bye.
Okay. See you then. Bye.
Bye.